Hello, and welcome back to Kessel Run Relay, a Star Wars podcast. Our episodes drop bi-weekly at the beginning of the week. Be sure to follow us on social media. Our links will be in the description.
Like, here are two great, like, concrete examples from the accolade of, like, Daphne Keene has been giving really great interviews about mostly her acting process of, like, what she did to prepare. But in doing so, she's said that, like, oh, yes, I played Jeki as having a crush on Osha. And, like, when you watch the show with that lens, like, you're like, oh, yeah, she totally does. And also saying, like, oh, Charlie and I, when we were doing our prep, we had this idea, Charlie Brenner, who plays Yord, when we were doing our prep, we had this idea that Jeki tried to take her trials with Yord, and that's how they know each other, and that's how they have this bond. Imagine if we had, like, episodes that could be focused on that. That could be, so, like, it's not them doing their actors prep, which is very interesting, and I love hearing actors talk about their prep, but instead is like, oh, here's, like, an episode where, like, an episode, like, we used to have this called Star Wars The Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels. An episode that was, like, Osha and Jeki have to go on a milk run together. And
yeah.
It ends in, like, Jeki being, like, I'm feeling these conflicting Jedi, like, these conflicting feelings with me as a Jedi because I want to be close to you and I don't understand what that means. And Osha has, and maybe Osha has a moment of, like, oh, I could tell you what this means, but you can't reciprocate it. Or it is reciprocated, or it's whatever. And it's like, that's no longer something that becomes like, oh, if you go to this wiki page, you get to find out this, if you've read this information. Instead, it's like, this is something that's a part of the show because we're taking time to develop the relationships that these characters have.
I don't want to be this person, but it's like, I hate to bring up Andor because I think people have started to bring up Andor in the case of Star Wars show too often to compare shows that are not that comparable. I've seen it with The Acolyte many times. However, what I think Andor does well is it does do a little bit more of this character development. And I think 100%. Particularly you see it with Cyril and his mother. People see those scenes. Stage and
screen legend Catherine Hunter.
Some people don't really understand. Those scenes are essential for developing why Cyril is the way he is. And it's just silly scenes with his mom nagging him, which, maybe in another show, they probably would have cut that. And they would have just done maybe a couple things, but it's the repetitive nature of it that makes it so clear why, and makes you go, oh, so that's why Cyril acts this way. That's why, and even if it doesn't directly affect his actions in that episode, you know that that is overall affecting his character.
Okay, who in Star Wars are the Kennedys? This is a great question.
I mean, technically it's the Skywalkers, isn't it? But, like, they kind of have the curse.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's why I was going to say the Grey Larks. I was like,
I don't know anything about not...
Axel Greylark, because famously I couldn't finish those books. No offense.
Kennedys are, because the Skywalkers are not involved enough in politics.
No. Exactly. Which is why I'm like...
A little, Organa's possibly...
No.
There needs to be more of them.
There needs to be more of them, and there needs to be more tragedy.
But there's
I'm
only
sorry,
one Grey Lark. There's only one Grey Lark child.
That's
so.
True. There's not enough siblings. We
yeah,
they don't get
hard,
a
that's hard
Axel Grey Lark would have a Chappaquiddick.
It's very hard because there's like or the families that are big and weird like don't have enough tragedy, like the Santecas.
Yeah. No, like, the Santecas
they're
trying
not powerful
to forget.
Enough.
No, and
well,
neither
they're not
are
enough.
The...
They're also like they're also like business. They're not politics.
Yeah,
the same with the Tags and the what is the other one?
Yeah, the Tags are in the League of Their Own.
Yeah,
the Tags and
there's that other family. What am I for? We're both forgetting.
Ugh. Describe them.
I don't know. Isn't it another hyperspace family?
The Graffs.
Yes,
the Graffs could be Kennedy coded.
No, you know who are the Kennedy who's. Who's Kennedy coded?
Yeah.
The Starroses. They are Kennedy coded. We
but
got.
There's not enough of them.
There's not. Well,
at least in the
Sana does have a messy sister.
Yeah.
Who
has a husband who's involved in the Empire, and then the grandma and the two aunts, and then the.
So does that make Gia Starros JFK? I could see I actually legitimately could see her getting a politically assassinated in
oh
the
yeah
next entire
okay
Republic
because that
book
kind of that yeah that kind of works
yeah.
Like, I actually could see her becoming a political, like, being assassinated. Okay, but
so. A political martyr.
Kira doesn't have a Bobby.
That's true. She doesn't have a brother. She has no family besides her daughter.
Which is important.
And, and that would make more sure for Jackie. Which adds a lot.
What a wild sentence to say.
Okay, I know earlier I was like, my request for the Star Wars panel is a Rey book. New request for the Star Wars panel is just somebody to write a Star Wars political drama, but it's like vaguely Kennedy. Referencing the Kennedys.
Yeah, it's all Kennedys. You're like, to the point where you're like, this is like, well, there's enough time where I feel like we could have a potential chancellor assassination passed down to a vice chancellor.
Yeah, I feel like it's
brother
like,
of assassinated candidate runs for chancellor and then gets assassinated.
Like, it's primed. It's primed for it.
I'm just saying.
If this stays in the episode, this is my call to action. Somebody, this is the fifth fan fiction I'm asking for. Somebody write this one for me.
If you could just figure out how to like Star Warsify the Kennedys, that'd be really like ideal for Morgan and I.
Yeah, that'd be really
and really no one else. And like the few other like, who else is really, no one I know.
Nobody wants this. It's just you and I.
It's just us.
It's like there's nobody out there.
Because the Clone Wars is already kind of, because we already have the Vietnam War side of it covered, so we need particularly just the Kennedy thing. Yeah,
we're so like.
God, because I need a Lyndon B. Johnson. We already kind of have Nixon in Star Wars with Palpatine.
Yeah, and so we need real bad
Lyndon Johnson. Well, that would in Star Wars technically it implies that the guy before.
Yeah, the Antilles. He's an Antilles.
Are the Antilles the Kennedys?
No, because Antilles is like Smith. Because there's like seven different Antilles.
Right, yeah. Okay. I forgot about that.
He isn't. Okay, I actually might be really wrong. Antilles might be the guy that's also nominated against Palpatine. Hold up.
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about there, because there was a guy in the first, in Phantom Menace.
There's Bail Antilles, Antilles, and then Captain Antilles, who's the captain of
Bail's, like, and Wedge. Captain and Wedge, I used to get confused, because I was like, it's not Wedge.
So they're both Captain Antilles, but they're not the same Captain Antilles.
Captain Antilles. And the Captain Antilles dies, right?
Yes.
I think, yeah, because he's the pilot of the Tantive IV, so he probably dies. Out. Yeah, he probably dies when the Empire boards it.
Okay, so Ewokopedia is telling me that the guy before the guy before Sheev was a guy named Phineas Valorum.
Okay,
Chancellor Valorum. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That name, that's incredible. So that's Lyndon B. Johnson.
He looks like Lyndon Johnson, let's be serious. This guy's drip goes crazy.
I have to agree.
Like, he's got this like beautiful like a thread work in this robe.
That he's described in The Living Force, he kind of eats. I can't lie.
I mean, who is
Lyndon? Do you know how Lyndon B. Johnson he is? I'll have to read The Living Force now. Have to report back about how Lyndon Johnson he looks. If he starts talking about his dick.
If he starts talking about
all
these,
how big his dick is.
Have you ever read Johnson's memoirs?
I haven't.
There's an incredible one about his, just about his dreams. This is like not on topic at all, but it's like crazy. He just had all of these anxiety dreams about how he was never going to become anything, like for his entire life, and then he like becomes president on accident, and these crazy nightmares. It's kind of just like it's like Johnson's dream journals. It's a crazy memoir.
I remember I read a whole thread about how people like, we need an autistic president, and somebody's like, Nixon. That's the thing. People think autistic president is like, would mean a good president. No. We've had autistic presidents. They've just probably been evil.
I want to take a second to admire the tangent that we're on right now.
The funniest thing was, I almost picked up literally the two memoirs that I've been thinking about picking up. Jimmy Carter's memoir.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Webber. The F1 driver. Those are the two memoirs that are like on the top of my head. I'm like, I really got to read Jimmy Carter's memoir. I really got to read Aussie Grip by Mark Webber.
I bet Jimmy Carter's memoir is really interesting.
Yeah, I almost picked up, because when I was at the Smithsonian last, they had one, but I didn't know if it was the one that I definitely wanted, because I know there's like a couple, so
Yeah, I
I didn't know
mean,
if I wanted that one for sure. And it was also really big, and I was like, I'm not sure about getting this back. Because all presidential books are like that
they're
big
so
ass
big.
paperback, and they're like this thick. So I'm like, I need to maybe do some work when I am at home.
Yeah, that's like an audiobook. That's an Audible credit.
Oh, so true. It's probably on YouTube.
Yeah, it's I'm reading it.
But would love. I just want to really read like just a big ass Jimmy Carter book. Like I want, that's like the next, I
Yeah.
do like
I
that's
mean,
like
like,
kind of
who amongst us?
like that's kind of like when dads are like, I'm gonna read a book about Lincoln, because every single dad ever has decided that
Yeah,
he
they just kind
wants
of
to
have
read a
to.
book about Lincoln. That's just like me, but with Jimmy Carter. I'm gonna
Okay,
read a book
also,
about,
we should probably get back to talking
get
about
back to, we just want to get back to talking about Star
the
Wars.
Lincoln
Right
right now. Okay.
Oh, one more thing before we continue, just about
Okay.
the whole me being a marketing ploy thing. Once again, this is me not ragging on the Walt Disney Corporation or anybody involved with those campaigns.
We would
I also
never.
want to say, because I know how this fandom gets, I am incredibly grateful for all the opportunities that have been given to me, aka the 15 billion stickers and the your tote bag I have. I
Oh
know
yeah.
how this is gonna look.
Okay. When
I
Charlie
want.
Barnett said that he knew about the Cyril and York comparisons, I almost died.
Yeah,
I'm so happy. I don't even care.
the campaign as a whole, being as involved with the fandom as it is, because High Republic is so fan driven, I love the campaign. I once again, I'm honored and grateful for everything that has come out of this. This is just simply talking from an analytical perspective. I have no sort of ties to Disney whatsoever. Nobody's paying me. I'm not a shill, unfortunately. But if you want me to be, hit up the email. I just wanted to analyze it in this sort of context that we're in right now, as like the state of television comes out of the SAG-AFTRA strikes and whatever. I just wanted to say that as well, because I know how this fandom gets, and I know if the wrong people hear this, that it's gonna spiral out of hand, and I just want to get that out of the way right there. So, without further
Once
ado,
again, like we
let's
said,
move on.
yeah, nothing wrong. Anyway, episode
I think we're
seven.
on seven. Oh my God. We've been recording
We
for
needed that.
almost.
Episode seven. This is the full, it's just Brendok from the Jedi's POV.
Which is okay. This is actually I am interested in this episode.
Yes.
Carrie Moss Jedi, thank you so much for coming back to me.
I'm so sorry, Queen.
What a sly queen you were.
I mean,
R.I.P.
I actually have never doubted Indara, because because Carrie Ann Moss looks at me and I say, whatever you say, beautiful.
So true.
I love the Matrix.
Oh, we had no idea.
She,
Oh my
it's
God,
like our
trans person loves the Matrix, like more
Matrix.
at seven.
Fork found in kitchen.
Like,
Yeah, I was like, likely place for you to be.
likely place for me to be is me, like, you know what? Seeing Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity in the Matrix was really impactful for the way I thought about my future personhood. Like, Jesus. But also, like, I think in the ways that we understand, because Hayden, you brought up earlier that, like, this show is really interested in developing the Jedi as people and developing every single
Yes.
Jedi that we look at as individual.
Fallible. As
Yes.
individual and fallible. And
Fallible.
very
Fallible, yes.
fallible, sorry.
You're good.
And
We knew what you meant.
I think that seeing the different ways, because I think I've seen a lot of people be like essentially do a 180 on Indara and Sol and be like, I never liked you, bitch. And it's like, I saw you 3 weeks
Really?
ago. Like,
Yeah, I
that's
saw
so
you posting
interesting.
that hashtag Soul Patrol in your
Like, that's
tweets.
like
Like,
that's so interesting. Star Wars is a franchise about nuance. And if you think that Star Wars is a franchise about being in the black and white,
Then you,
that's Sith
it's
talking.
completely gone over your head. Like, it's
Also, Star Wars
impenetrable.
is about redemption. It's about people making mistakes and people actively trying to do better. So
That's
did
like,
Sol make a mistake? Yes, but does it seem like Sol has also actively been trying to do better since that?
yes.
Also, yes.
The like three tenets of Star Wars are redemption, twins and fuck it, we ball. Like, those are kind
so
of
true.
And like, with the fourth one being the Vietnam War. Like,
yeah.
Like, those are kind of the four grounding principles of Star Wars. And
Leslie got them all, except for the Vietnam War. Leslie got the main three. Vietnam
Leslie
War
got the main
four.
The Vietnam War is a special circumstance. The Vietnam War is George's special interest, and so we let him have that. So I think that this is a conversation, and this is a space, a soul fucking up in every sense of the word. Because, and this is a thing that we see a lot of Jedi do, is, or like think that they do, like, this is something Obi-Wan struggles with, this is something Elzar struggles with, is like, I made, this is, I don't think that the Jedi have a lot of analogies to Christianity, but these are three very Catholic things that they do, is I make a single mistake and all of a sudden my life has no meaning and I am the worst human being alive. Yeah.
And I have to go on like this special, like, I have to go to this special trip where I can, like, atone for my sins.
Yeah, it's, like, yeah. Like, that's a thing that the Jedi do a lot. That's a thing that I am reading with, like, being raised Catholic. I'm reading that onto there. That's not a text thing. That's a perspective thing. But I think that it's interesting that, like, it is Indara who brings him back. It is Indara who says, like, okay, you've made a mistake. Your actions have consequences, and they are, you're a parent now. And like, yeah. but it is not in a sense, it is not in a negative sense, because she says, like, there's a reason you don't have a Padawan yet. You're trying to learn how to be somebody to bring that in. And I think what's even more interesting is the ways that we see Indara fail Torben.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, and I think that this is my read on this, is I think that this comes from both of them, of Torben, I think, is kind of supposed to be a teenager, I assume.
Yeah.
And yeah, he reads very young,
like,
adult.
Yes. Late teens, early 20s, I think.
And so he's kind
I would
of
not
acting
put the, over 21.
Yeah, he's kind of acting in that way of, he's going to be grumpy and he's going to be moody. And Indara fails to realize that there's actually something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of writes off his dislike of, where are they?
Brendok. This is, yeah.
Like, kind of writes that off as a, like, bout of moodiness until it breaks. Like, until her child, because I will not stop I think that the show is really interesting for continuously framing Padawans as pupils, not as children. And that's not how, like, that is said over and over and over again, is, like, your pupil, your pupil, your pupil, your pupil. And if you guys have thoughts on that, I would like to hear them. But my read on the Jedi has always been that it is a parental relationship.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception being Anakin and Obi-Wan, which is, like, special circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But Indara's case with Torben is, I didn't see that my student, my child, was hurting. And it has, and now I have to also live with this consequence that, like, things have gone exceptionally wrong, and now he is scarred horribly.
Yeah.
And figuratively.
Literally. I think, at least on, so I mean, I think at least on the Master and Padawan relationship, I've seen it as both. And I think it kind of depends on who the Master and Padawan duo are, because I think at least in the ones that we've seen the most, it feels like parent child. But, like, I don't know, like, I could see, like, Dora and Reese, that to me, from what we saw, felt more
pupil
teacher. Mm-hmm. I think Comac and Reese felt maybe a little father son more. I think early Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon felt very pupil,
like, Padawan era,
which I already could argue throughout the whole thing, and that is also could affect how Obi-Wan becomes a teacher to Anakin. Obviously, there's a lot of other circumstances with Anakin,
yes,
but, like,
course.
In particular, like, because he was young, just lost his mother, like, you know, they're
really
whatever,
close
but
in
like
age, like, all
yeah,
this stuff.
Like, all that stuff, like, but, and, like, that makes me curious to, like, but, like, I think But I do think more often than not, it does definitely come off as a parent-child relationship.
That I think, sorry.
And I think, and I wonder if that's like maybe like Torben and Indara is like, it's almost like that like mix almost that like Torben kind of wishes that Indara was closer to him and understood him more. And Indara thinks that, you know, this is what my Padawan needs. So that could also be maybe the disconnect between them, and a disconnect I think we've seen with, like, I remember like Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, like a Padawan, the whole thing was like Obi-Wan's like, I feel like I don't understand him and he doesn't understand me.
Yes.
And I think like that might have also could potentially been maybe a not as big of a thing with Indara and Torben, but a thing for sure, because like yeah, she's totally fun and good being out in the wilderness collecting things, and Torben is like, I just want to go home. And it's also so funny to me when they ask Leslie, they're like, is there like a deeper thing? She's like, no, he just didn't want to be there.
He's so mean.
Yeah, like that's
he just like, which is, I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
it's very kid goes away from his parents at a long distance school for the first time, and sometimes he just wants to go home and sleep in his own bed.
Yeah, when you, it's like that first semester you're away at college, and after like the fun of being away at college wears off, you're like,
oh, I gotta do this for the next 4 years.
You're like, I just really wish I was home in the bed that I know with my parents and home cooking instead of this weird dining hall food.
Yeah.
Like, instead of this weird moss collecting and whatever we're eating every single night. I just want to be home.
Yeah.
And I think this was brought up on RuPalps when they were talking about, oh, I don't know what they were talking about, because I guess it wasn't last week's episode, but that like the search for, so maybe it wasn't on RuPalps, but like the search for a vergence is an idea of the Jedi trying to fulfill their various prophecies that they have, that they hear. God, I wish I actually remembered who said this, because I can't remember when we hear this, like the series of prophecies, but we know that like
I think it's in Master and Apprentice when they're reading out all the prophecies and Obi-Wan is going through them.
Yes. And we know that like one of them becomes the Nameless, one of them becomes
Anakin,
but Obi-Wan, and that's the one that Qui-Gon is obsessed with. Qui-Gon is obsessed with finding out this vergence. And so it's interesting that these Jedi have been drawn to Brandok also in search of that. Also, and then to hear the mother say like, oh, your search for this will be your doom. I mean, once again, Leslie is the student of the forms. Leslie is somebody who is placing the whole thing in the context. She understands that like the fourth actual tenet of Star Wars is being self-referential and is poetry at rhymes.
Yeah.
Like the whole thing has to kind of coalesce and come together. And I think that the way that we see this as a moment of poetry at rhymes is really interesting.
And we can also extend that further to being between almost like Osha and Mei being some sort of like dyad thing that Luke and Leia are.
Two souls split into
literally
two, one soul split into two bodies,
so literally
there's a lot
like
of questions
Kylo
about
and...
that once again. Well, no, but Kylo and Rey are not two souls split into one body. I think there is something very particular about the two souls split into one body thing, because I don't think it's something like Rey or Kylo or even the Luke and Leia twins.
Yeah, there's something
I think it's something completely different. I think it's like, I would assume it's similar to a dyad, but also if it was similar to a dyad, wouldn't, I'm curious, like, because like if it's similar to a dyad, we would definitely, I feel like there would have been like a sense in the Force that like Osha died, or when Mei died, like, you know, they assumed Mei was dead, but I don't know, maybe because she was knocked out, I don't know.
Yeah, it's there's definitely something interesting there. Again, it's like we're still asking questions and we don't have But I think that in terms of, I am thinking of this in terms of the ways that, where do I want to go with this? The idea of, I think we're supposed to draw the parallels to Kylo and Rey. We're supposed to draw the Luke and Leia parallels. We're supposed to, mm-hmm. all of these, like, all of these twins. Star Wars is about twins. And I think it's less about, like, the morality of them and then more so the way that I think that the show is trying to break down desire, longing, wanting, these kind of binary things that we think of as binary. The Jedi, like the light operating as a collective, the dark operating as a solo act.
And I think that concept is very prevalent throughout the entire High Republic.
Yes,
and it's
very
not,
much so.
It's not as binary as it is in the prequels. And I mean, it does make sense that this is like set in the High Republic, and that's one of the main features of the show.
Mm-hmm. Is the ability to kind of explore those two. And I think Osha and May, as we see them in this, and this is a little bit as we see them in episode 3, but then also as Solan and Dara are conceiving of them, is thinking of them as these binaries, as one cannot exist without the other. And Osha is kind of trying to find this drive to exist as the same thing, and finding out, as to exist as her own individual, and finding out that she is not, and she never will be.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting, because Torben says, like, they would be, even twins would have a different set of genomes, would have a different set, yeah. of whatever the mm-hmm. science fiction word is that they use.
The middle, I thought these, was it?
They specifically do say
M count.
They specifically don't say midichlorian, which I found exceptionally yeah. funny.
They've done that before too, because I remember in Mando
Mando and in Bad Batch they called it M count. They didn't say midichlorians.
Which is so funny because like in it kind of makes sense after the prequels that it would be M count, but to do it to midichlorians back to M count is so funny.
Maybe Obi-Wan just like to call things by his full name.
Yeah, there's something that about Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon being
Qui-Gon.
Like,
yes.
being like, we will call them
midichlorians. They do so much. They read so many books. They're like, we have to.
Yeah, we
so
got to full name these guys.
Yeah. God, I hate them. But I think I say with a lot of affection. So I'm fascinated by questions of personhood in media. I'm fascinated by, and this is a thing I do in superhero scholarship, is like, a thing that the superhero does is a declaration of self, is saying, mm-hmm. I am something. Like, Magneto says, I am Magneto. And, like, that declaration of self means something. And I think that Osha's desire to be an individual and her and the knowledge that it is, that she genetically is not, mm-hmm. is really fascinating to me. Not even in a metaphysical force sense, but in a, like, what does this mean for the ways that she operates around the world, and then also in the ways that the other characters treat her. Because in episode 6, Chimera kind of is immediately ready to dismiss May, because it's like, oh, I have the real prize, which is Osha. And we mm-hmm. see Sol ready to dismiss May because May is too far gone. Which, again, Sol, that's a child. Like, if Osha's...
Yeah.
And I think that also, I think he's kind of seeing in Dara's perspective, this is doing a really great job of being like, this is just a different way of practicing the Force. And then Dara is very much like, we should leave them alone. And Sol's like, we should colonize. And colonize is too strong a word. But he was like, we need to investigate them immediately. And the other three are like, we could leave them alone.
Welcome back, phase two.
Torben's like, I just want to leave. Torben's like, I say
I just
want to
go home.
Because we yeah. can go home if we don't do that.
Yeah.
He's so
and
real.
And Sol's desire to kind of find this answer is, I think, kind of playing into this really interesting aspect of maybe not his own character, but I think this show is in conversation with fandom very explicitly. And I think is kind of mm-hmm. placing this in conversation, this like idea of like the Jedi as a complete moral center.
Mm-hmm.
And also the way that the Jedi worship the Force as the correct way of using it and of practicing it and of worshiping it, which again, welcome back phase two. Like, I think that thinking about the way that the Path of the Open Hand operates as an understanding of the Force, like, obviously the Path of the Open Hand is a cult, but even the other, even the Knights of, not the Knights of, what the,
Guardians of the Wills.
Thank you. The Guardians of the Wills, the ways that, oh my God, what is his name?
Tay.
No.
Not Tay.
Donnie Yen's character.
Chirrut.
Chirrut, thank you. A very fascinating Chirrut character. Anyway, though. I find Chirrut a very fascinating character in the ways that I don't have a lot of interest for Tay. It's fine. But I think that where Chirrut operates and the way that Chirrut, and I think also, doesn't, what is, no, Jin's mom.
Lyra, yeah. She, okay, that she's is what she's like a Force believer. I think she was.
I love her character.
There's more specifics around it that I cannot remember, but she is a very big like Force believer.
Yeah, yeah. Like, especially the in them... Catalyst. Yes. That goes into her way of thinking.
In Catalyst. Like the way that the two of them operate and think about the Force, I think is, because I also don't think, like the mothers, their coven, they're using the Force. They're using the Force.
Yeah, it's some form of the Force.
Like, listen, the show can tell me next, can tell me on Tuesday, like, they're using some other spiritual thing, and I'll be like, uh-uh, buddy, that's the Force. Like, this is Star Wars, you're using the Force. You're using your space.
I think it's all the Force.
It's all the Force, that's what the Force is.
You rename it, but it's all the Force.
It's all the Force. It's a way of understanding it. That's how religion operates. I've been reading a lot of religious memoirs recently, too, and it's like, that's how we think of religion. Like, especially, like, is like it's all that.
Yeah.
It's all the same thing.
Mm-hmm. It's just different ways of like working with it and operating with it for
and
your
understanding
own
it.
And like, not to
interesting,
because I think a lot of people run into issues when they tie the Jedi so much to their experience with Western religion. However, a good way to kind of think about it for some people is like, it's like the Force is like the overarching idea of Christianity, and then all of these people
which
are like,
also,
like the Jedi is also, and then like, the Jedi is Catholicism, and then all of these other sects are like the Protestants.
Which is like, if that helps you, that's a way of thinking about it. Has George also said that like he was trying to like do a white man's Buddhism? Like,
but we don't.
but it's like, if you think about it in that sense, you think you can kind of also understand the like soul's fear around something that is not familiar to him manifests in a way of, I need to protect these children.
Oh, that's poignant, especially right now.
I think that is, and I encourage people to interpret that however they want to, but I think that that's kind of what we're seeing textually, and in Dara placing that into conversation of saying these children seem happy,
however
and then also to then make Osha's decision to say, I want to do something else. And then you get the line from the mother of, I was going to let her go.
Yeah, like, it's, I think that's also it, is like, there's these perspectives of, like, and also, like, to be fair, like, this was the Jedi's point of view, and we've taken this as truth. But also, if Soul is telling the story, if we're believing that this is, like, Soul's POV of events, then it's like, is there things that maybe he misremembered, even? Or things that he didn't see that went down that night. But yeah, I also think like people like, I think, took this episode as such like Jedi bad and not what we're saying, which is,
and
Jedi
that, I think,
are fallible, Jedi make mistakes. And also did note this, like, Indira said we should leave. The Jedi Council said no. Soul said, I feel this call to the Force, that this is my Padawan.
Torben, which is a really said, real interpretation of the Force. He's allowed to interpret it like that.
That is valid and true. And like we've seen that, and like, not, I know some people didn't like it, but like, that's what Qui-Gon, that's why with Qui-Gon and Anakin.
That's how Kanto found said, Lula.
Yeah, Qui-Gon said, like, this is like, I feel a call that this is the chosen one. I need to bring this child back. And the Order was like, we don't like this. But they went ahead.
The Order saw this.
Yeah. And Yoda said, This sounds familiar to me.
Yoda said, oh, I think
I've seen this film before. I have.
Yoda said, I remember another kid who they brought when she was like 8 years old.
So interesting. But of course, Yoda's not going to give specifics.
No, because no. Why would he ever?
Need to know.
Why would he ever say something directly to anybody? Why would he not be weird and mysterious? Why would he be directed to the point when he could be vague and mysterious?
King of
Bits. He just doesn't have a weird guy in the basement to send anyone to to talk about Anakin. So they're like, whatever we gotta do.
This is so anecdotal. I love how like little information we know about Yoda's species. And so I would love to find out that like, I hate to Star Trek it for a second, but like Vulcan culture is like super literal. Like they like Spock purposely doesn't understand metaphors, but like culturally, like they don't speak in metaphor. I would love to find out that like culturally Yoda's species or his people only speak in metaphor, and like he has run into this problem for 900 years and like has never realized that like people need him to speak literally.
To be fair too, Yaddle also is around for a long time and also does not share information, so maybe lying is just, they're just like that. Maybe Grogu's gonna grow up and he's like not gonna tell people shit, and we're gonna be like, what the hell, Grogu? And it's like, oh no, that's just like, they're just like that.
It's like that.
That's just that. That's like in their like DNA.
Their genes.
Also, I don't want to get too far into it, but speaking of the culture thing, did you guys see the thing where like it's likely that Cal Nanka isolated himself because he scratched Tobin?
Yes, he's the mad claw. There we go. Yes, yeah. I did see that.
That was so sad to me, but also I have a few questions about the Wookiee drawing the line at claws are peaceful tools, which, yeah, good. Love that. Love getting that bit of culture in Star Wars and, like, seeing the different culture stuff.
Yay, Wookiee.
But ripping off people's arms is okay. But that is fine.
To be fair, I don't think we've seen a Wookiee Jedi do that.
Yes.
But the Jedi are different, because the Mad Claw thing is not just a Wookiee Jedi thing, it's a Wookiee thing.
Yeah, so I'm saying maybe Chewie was just like that.
Yeah, to be fair.
Maybe he just goes ham because he wants to.
And to be fair, Chewie never scratched anyone.
Yeah.
Chewie has never scratched anyone, he just pulls.
Actually, I think some of this, weirdly enough, is explained in Dark Force Rising, which is a book that I haven't read in years, but basically Han and Leia have to go hide out on Kashyyyk, and they get like a little Wookiee culture lesson.
Okay.
Been a while since I read the book, but I think that's where they first introduce the concept of a Mad Claw. Not 100% sure, but I think it was mentioned there because I've heard of it before. But the only reason that why it's so taboo is they believe, at least the Wookiee in Dark Force Rising, I think, again, this is like jumbled up in my head, they primarily use their claws for climbing. So they only use their claws in times of battle if it's like their last necessity. So if they unsheath their claws, not like in the wrong context or whatever, then there's like shame put on that. So it's a very cultural idea and way of looking at it, but I feel so bad for Kalmanka.
Because I do feel that Chewie has been in many life or death situations where it's like, how does Chewie work that out? Because how many situations
I don't know, man. What Kashyyyk doesn't see won't hurt him.
Yeah, I mean, we have never seen Chewie ever scratch anyone. He's killed people, he's shot people, he's pulled people's arms off.
He has not scratched anyone.
Wookiee diaspora. Why can he not be living in the cultural...
He is always in a situation where violence is called for. He's never like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes he instigates, because in Solo, they could have just knocked him out, and he definitely just decides to rip their arms off. Well, yeah,
maybe that's just his vibe.
Yeah.
And to be fair, he's best friends with Han Solo, so that would make a lot of sense that Chewie is just like that.
Because Han Solo is his fucked up little dog.
Exactly. Yeah,
fucked up little dog. Like, I mean, but anyway, I'm glad we had this, really, like, sad.
Yes.
This tangent anyway, about Wookiee culture.
I think that was really sad and interesting, but especially because I imagine it weighs heavier on Kalmaka because he didn't have control over it, and it was a child. Jedi, a child, and a Jedi, and someone who is on his side, like someone who he would never attack. Really, you would never generally attack another Jedi. So, and like this, for that, like I imagine, also,
I assume that's also why Corbin takes the Barash vow, right?
I think what happens is like he takes Corbin it after. He takes, I think what he said was, there's the 6 years that Osha is training, and then after she leaves, I think he takes it. It's either it one
was,
of those
it
flipped.
Was because he is,
yes,
like,
it
I
is
think
what,
he thinks
it
he's
is because of what happened on Brendan.
He went
yes.
to the witches, like, he went on the speeder and ran off and was like, let's get the kids! We gotta dip!
So he just wants to go home. Poor kid.
And then somebody said it was really sad because he wants to go home, and then he spends most of the rest of his life away from Coruscant.
Yeah.
Poor kid.
Poor Torben.
It's interesting to see how all of them cope, you know? Like, Indara essentially kind of becomes a way seeker.
Yeah.
I wonder if that'll get name dropped in the last episode of
Soul. Whereas, like, Soul threw himself so deeply into being a master to Osha, and then it seems to Jackie.
And to teaching younglings.
Yeah. And see, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He throws himself into teaching. He tries to give back.
Because he wanted, it's like, oh, you wanted this Padawan so bad. Look what it cost to you. So you better a good fucking teacher.
Yeah. And I think also it, again, this like unanswered question, interested to see how it plays out, of like, when does the reveal come to Osha that Soul is responsible for the death of her mom?
It feels like this brings us to, because obviously I think the idea is like, with the Brydock episode, that like Soul would have been telling that to May, who is tied up.
I was under the impression that May is the one who, like, May witnessed that happen.
Oh, May witnessed it too, but because there was all that Jedi stuff, that's why. Like, I think basically, like, my assumption was Soul was filling in the gaps for May of what she didn't see.
Oh, okay.
To kind of like explain like what was happening to the point where we got to why he killed her mother. I think that was it. But like, obviously, like, yeah, May knew that because May was there for those events. So that leaves us with whatever the fuck is happening with Chimere and Osha. She just put on his helmet. So that's like,
which I think is going, I think that's going to be a moment of her reconnecting with the Force.
The like sensory deprivation tank.
And we've seen her be completely shut off from the Force, and we know that a Jedi that shuts them off from the Force. And I guess that this is addressed in the episode where she's like, well, it's a muscle, you have to work it. And Chimera's like, is that what they told you? And it's like, yeah. And also I've seen that like and also like me, the viewer, have been watching Star Wars, and like that's a documented thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a thing that happens.
And also like, I haven't used the Force in many years, and now I tried to use it and I struggled.
Yeah, with it. Also like, we watched her like struggle to use the Force. Like, I don't understand.
Like, I get it. I get where Chimera's coming from. I don't really understand where people are so in this like idea that he is fully telling the truth to Osha, and like,
people
not at all
trying.
People think
he's telling the truth?
I've seen that. Like, they're like, well, the Jedi liked her or whatever. Or like, this idea that like, well, she can leave at any time. Which I don't fully believe that. I'm sorry.
No.
That's a manipulation. This man is a self-proclaimed
Sith. This is literally textbook Sith activities.
Also, like, it's like, even if he's telling the truth in the way that the Sith are telling the truth, this manipulation, the Sith, even the idea of the Sith existing is like, the dark side is like good or correct, is like, I view it kind of as like a manipulation.
It is a manipulation.
Like, yeah.
To say that is true, even if that is what his truth and what he believes.
There's an entire part of a movie about it in the prequels.
Yeah, like, I just think like, it's like, I'm not saying he's totally incorrect about the Jedi, but
I think, not to continue to bring this to like a point of broader industry-wide like media analysis, but I think that like what we're seeing is this byproduct of things that didn't necessarily start with Kylo Ren, but I think of like maybe even started with like Loki, but like has been happening for a very long time, of people finding it uncomfortable to think a villain is attractive and therefore that, like, it's this broader question of like, oh, if I agree with this piece of, if I like this piece of media, I'm agreeing with what it's saying. So if I think this villain's attractive, I'm agreeing with what he's saying. And it's like, and you I don't have to do that, babes. You, like, you can just think he's hot.
And it also doesn't help that that is also an accusation leveled at people. That basically, yes, when people say, I like Kylo Ren, it's like, or oh, I think Kylo Ren is hot. Oh, you think he's hot, and you would like that in a real relationship. Like,
it's
no,
like, oh,
that's
so
not...
you agree with fascism? And it's like,
you
no.
You agree with fascism? No. And like, so big, you like... would let, like, a boyfriend do that to you? No, I'm not saying that.
No, I like a man with dark hair who is, like, shaped like a...
Yeah, triangle, and, it, like... and I think in Star Wars, too, we see this, like, repeatedly with especially women who say they like... the male characters who are bad. We've seen it with Thrawn, we've seen it with Cyril, Kylo Ren.
I think we see this leveled in universe at Padme.
Yeah.
I think somebody does say that to Padme.
Which, like, Padme, and we see it with Darth Vader sometimes, less because a lot of men like Darth Vader in a way that I think not as many men like Kylo Ren or Cyril, or even I haven't seen maybe Chimera as much.
But you certainly see it with people who say it about Anakin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, it's like, you know. And Chimera is complex, and like, that's the thing too, is like, I'm not saying that Chimera doesn't have nuance to him. He
you
does.
You can like villains.
You can like villains. He
that's
also,
a thing here. We're okay with that.
He also killed a child, and you can say he kind of had the, yeah, and people like to bring this up. I didn't bring this up, but like, people like, oh, it's such a gotcha moment when he was like, well, you brought her here. It's like, they didn't think this was a mission, a battle mission. They thought this was a mission where they were going to get a Jedi Master, and they would find...
they were not even prepared to find Mei. They were prepared, yeah, to go get Kel Naka.
Kel Naka. Like, this was not... That is a pretty... The mission that they were set up for would have been a fine Padawan mission. Mm-hmm. And also, you called her an it.
Yeah.
So,
I was a xenophobic, like, asshole.
But that's the thing, is like, I don't want to, like, I understand, like, yeah, Chimera is pointing out the flaw of the Jedi, of like, the Jedi do in some ways rely on child soldiers. He is also flawed in the fact that he still killed her. He, yeah, could have left her alive. He could have called her by her name.
You didn't have to stab her three times.
Yeah. You could have, like, there's so many, like, things in that way. The same way it's like, yeah, it's nice that he's, like, he hasn't done anything to OSHA, like, violently, yeah, and I don't think he does, because I think it's very similar to Kylo and Rey, where obviously he really wants a pupil.
Mm-hmm. He says he wants an acolyte.
He wants an acolyte, which is the same thing with Kylo and Rey. Whenever people also bring up the fight thing, like, Kylo wants to teach Rey. He wants Rey on his side. Kymir wants OSHA on his side. But
there can, like, also be a sexual romantic tension there. Two, yes, things can exist.
Yeah, and it's kind of more interesting when that is there, maybe too, yeah, where it's like, oh, okay, like, maybe part of her draw is, like, especially when you take someone who is so lonely, like OSHA is, like we've seen with OSHA in a similar way that I think Rey was, and even with Kylo and Chimera, when you take these such lonely people and then you offer them,
especially
not even
because...
just friendship, but like romance, which can go on an even deeper level in friendship sometimes, that, like, that is very tempting.
Mm-hmm. Especially because the Sith pride on isolationism. They talk about the rule of two, but the rule of two also inherently requires you have to kill the master. Like, that is, like, that is not
new.
Yeah. The rule, like, the Sith code, the rule of two says you must kill the master. It is not that the only two exist. It says that, like, the goal of the apprentice is to kill the master. And, like, that is an isolationist philosophy. That is a philosophy that devalues community and that rewards being apart. And so there is an allure to having a follower, to having an acolyte, because especially if it's someone that you can manipulate. Because you think about the most famous duo, of course, being Palpatine and Anakin. Like, Palpatine, who's grooming Anakin, who is manipulating him the whole time, is doing this because it's like, I am placing you in a position where you will never be able to overthrow me. Because I'm the one that is giving you what you want. That is the same tactic. It's being used to the same degree that Kylo's using it for Rey, that Chimera's using it for OSHA. It's not being used in the same extremities, but it's being used of, if I can give you something, you will never threaten my power. And then I can get the connection that I am desiring. Because also, both of these characters are fallen Jedi. Like, both Kylo and Chimera are Jedi, that are characters that feel like the Jedi betrayed them in some sense.
And I mean, a little bit too, I think the difference too is like, obviously, like so far is like Kylo in the end was also kind of willing to walk away from everything just if he could have Rey, you know?
Because
Whereas I
it's
don't, like,
desire for
obviously,
connection.
it's connected, which I don't think Chimer will do. I don't think Chimer is coming for the same thing. Chimer is not going to walk away if he can just have Osha. Like, that's not at all what's happening here, which is interesting. But I also, this is like too, but like, it's like that setting is so much up. They had this connection for one episode. We had a flashback episode. We have one episode left.
Oh,
One
we
episode
keep
left
coming
where
back to
we have to
this.
see
It all comes back.
some
It all comes
resolution
back.
to Chimera and Osha's relationship, some resolution to Osha and Mei's relationship, some resolution to Sol and Osha and Mei's relationship, some resolution to whatever is going on with Vernestra and probably whatever is going on with Vernestra and Chimera, and some resolution on there is a whole nother character played by an actor who we do not know yet.
Is there really?
Yep,
Yeah,
there is,
David
and I can't.
Yarwood.
There's a whole nother
No.
character that
Yeah,
so far David
the
Harewood,
guy from the Arrowverse. I
so
don't, that means nothing to me. Let me go to the
who is rumored, who people are theorizing to basically be like
Chimer's master.
Chimera's master. So
Shut
that's a
up. We're
whole, and
not
that's the whole
doing.
thing, which is like
What is
it's
the name of this actor? David Harewood, I think. He's not on the IMDb page.
I thought it came,
David.
maybe I thought it wasn't, I don't know where it came from, but I did see people talking about how he
Me
was going to
too.
be in it and we haven't
Let
seen him
me.
yet.
That can't be. Because let me. I'm on. Looking for people who have won. Okay. I think we might be in the clear, guys.
Oh, I thought it was because I didn't see it on IMDb. I saw it on like a news article or something.
Yeah. I'm on the IMDb page.
What is
I'm
it,
looking.
Harewood?
Yeah. David Harewood. I mean, and granted, sometimes IMDb doesn't update if it's an actor that hasn't shown up yet.
It from 20. Oh, maybe it's just a rumor. Well, no, this is Forbes.
Forbes.
Forbes. I don't know. I guess it's reported. I guess it was reported, but there is a rumor
If
that
that's the
he is
case, that's.
crazy. So I don't want to say, but I have seen other people, and I've seen other like mutuals of mine talking about
Yeah.
him being in it. So that's like, I just want to mention.
I know the article you're talking about. I don't remember what it's from.
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that there is still a possibility that there's a whole nother actor character being introduced, which once again, I would say would be fine.
If it
More
wasn't the finale.
if it wasn't the finale, or if we knew for sure we were most definitely getting a season two, it was most definitely a continuation of a direct continuation, and it was coming out within a year. Because even a season two confirmation at this point, I'm still gonna be like, but we won't see it till at least 2026,
That makes me ill.
Yeah, it's just
because
it's not
between
sustainable.
because even between now, that's like basically the earliest they could work it into their like release schedule. They because we mind you still have the at or still have Skeleton Crew, which is coming out,
Which
and
I am
Andor season
excited
two.
about.
I am excited too. We have Skeleton Crew, Andor. Those are for sure filmed and coming out. We still have Mando season four, and
No fucking way.
probably, and based on the release, likely another Tales thing, because they have done Tales twice now, so that'll come out whatever. Plus rumors, I don't know. So and then on top of that, there, I mean, the idea is I think that they would return to releasing movies again. With the Rey movie and the Mando movie and the Dawn of the Jedi movie. So, depending on when those movies come out, that also affects when they want to release shows. Is it going to be like Mando and the Rise of Skywalker where they release at the same time?
And it has
Or
that
would,
exclusive clip or something.
yeah, or is it going to be that they don't want to take that away? I don't know, but that means that there is a lot on the slate already, in addition to a season two coming out, which I would love. However, once again, preparing yourself to wait at least 2 years because it's if it hasn't been confirmed, there's no way they've started filming anything.
There's
No.
no way they started writing things. No.
Yeah, or if it's writing, it's like they all have a vague idea of where they wanted to go for season two, but that's, yeah, they haven't written anything.
And that's not to,
and obviously, like, some of the actors in this cast, once again, they're busy actors. I don't know what their contracts, I don't know what their contracts look like, but you know, Amandala, I mean, Manny Jacinto has been in a lot. Charlie Barnett does quite a few things. He does, I mean,
he's like, on Chicago Fire, I think.
He's not or anymore. Something. He's not anymore. but like, you know, they're in demand. This show might have made them more in demand.
I guarantee Daphne Keane's, like, her team is like gotta be working this, especially yeah. with the MCU stuff now that's happening. Like, her team has gotta be like getting her.
Yeah. I guess you probably wouldn't have to worry about Daphne Keane coming back maybe as much, but
oh yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I guess Charlie and Daphne.
That she was dead for a second.
Yeah, but like, you know, it's just like, and that was the thing with the MCU, is part of it was, I think people miss with what Star Wars is a little bit missing and with the movies, is the MCU, it was that they were
cranking those shits out
like it was television.
It used to be like, you know, the reason they could keep those actors was for so long was
because they had like a multi-movie contract.
You're gonna film a movie and then you're gonna be a cameo in this movie and then you'll have a guest starring role in this movie and then we're gonna have you be in an end credit scene of this movie. So it was like that you could keep them because you were having them do things.
You had it literally written in writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm sure, and I know Star Wars has those contracts because Star Wars had Felicity sign a multi-movie contract.
Just to be safe.
Just to be safe. I am assuming that the contracts that most of these people signed are for multiple seasons or multiple movies or whatever. However, MCU, it wasn't even just the multi-movie contracts. It was the fact that the filming was so close.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it wasn't just that they had the contracts, because that's the thing with Euphoria. The contracts for Euphoria said whatever many seasons. But it's about trying to get those people back to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas like, it's like if they wanted these people back, like really, you should be like writing The Acolyte now and season two now and planning to film season two at the end of this year.
I mean, that's what they did with Andor.
Yeah.
Like,
and Andor was a little, I want to say too, part of this might be affected. We have to know all these shows. Andor was affected by the COVID and the writer's strike. And mm-hmm. I imagine some of the show was affected by the writer's strike and the actor strike.
Mm-hmm. Just in terms of like when they could go to production.
Yeah. So that is also a note with that, like, of course. However, now when the show is coming out, there is not any strikes.
Yeah.
So they could have at any point in this season announced a season two. They could have at any point said, Leslie, start writing. We want to film.
This is again an industry problem mm-hmm. I know what's going to happen is it's going to be a month from now. They're going to get that renewal date.
Yeah.
Just because it's like, we want to build this into having legs. We want to see if this is sustainable. This is the way that this thing markets now. And it's like the fact that this is something that we've been making television for 50 years. And then big Netflix showed up and was like, have you considered making television differently? And we were all like, no, we haven't. And then it crashed and burned. Do you know when House of Cards premiered? Let's do a little research. Let's do a little research to House of Cards.
It's God. Like, just so crazy to me that like they said the Bridgerton, they're like, yeah, the next Bridgerton season will come out in 2 to 3 years. The fuck do you mean two to three years?
It's been, over a decade. We had like 11 with the years.
With the Bridgerton 2, I'm like, bitch, you have the books.
You don't need to be doing this.
You have adapted source material. I know they changed a lot for the show, but a lot of the bigger plot strokes and general romance of the books is things they're pulling from the books. Why is it taking you 2 to 3 years to release eight episode romance show?
What are you doing? Like,
it's not even like they're like, oh, we do elaborate CGI scenes.
No.
What are you doing? They're
filming on location.
You should have been filming fucking Benedict season as you were filming this second season. Or this third season. You should have been filming this. You should have been writing Benedict season as Penelope and Luke were filming. You should have been like, what is happening?
Especially because it then becomes a question of audience retention.
Yeah, and it doesn't help too that, like, obviously this is, I think what's helped at least the Star Wars shows, thankfully, is they've gone to the weekly releases.
Thank God.
Which I think has helped a lot with
audience again, because we were doing television for 50 years with a thing called release dates.
And release dates.
And then House of Cards premieres, and they said, what if we fixed everything? And it's like, no!
No.
How does this way that
the Netflix and Hulu shows, at least some of the Hulu shows, are not doing, which is they do the or you do the worst, even the worst one, which is splitting the season, where we're going to drop half the season all in one day and half again. And then do a month in between each season where, oh, here's the thing. If you just did weekly releases, it would run through that whole time. You keep the conversation going that whole time.
Because we see it happen in real time. Like, the thing that's crazy to me is that, like, The Bear season 3 drops every single episode on the same day. And I'm no longer seeing people talk about it. I am still seeing people talk about Interview with a Vampire season 2. And that season ended like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And that's because they built up an audience retention.
They released things weekly. They built up an audience retention. And I think there was less time in between the seasons, if I'm correct.
And what, even The Bear has, like, miraculously, quote unquote, which, like, we'll see what happens now that IO is in high demand, but it's, like, miraculously.
And Jeremy and Evan.
Now that cast kind of becomes a big deal. But, like, for the past 3 years, every single summer, you get a new season of The Bear. Now, imagine what could happen if you had a weekly, like, this isn't hard.
Yeah, because at least, like, The Bear, it's, like, they drop it all at once, but yeah, at least they've been releasing it yearly.
Like, this is how we've been doing this for years. This is not challenging. I hate to, like, beat a dead horse, and we've been talking for hours, but I wouldn't, so I feel like I am beating a dead horse in many ways, but it's like, we know how to do this. This is a thing we know how to do. This is the thing also genre television knows how to do. I think that a lot of, like, I'm really, like, I'm hitting the Morgan bingo. I'm hitting the Morgan bingo.
How long did, like, Star Trek and Doctor Who do weekly releases, a season every year?
Like, Battlestar Galactica. Like, this is a thing that exists. Like,
babe, sure, just be Doctor. Just go back to Doctor Who.
And because now it's happening to Doctor Who. Now Doctor Who is, like, having this, like, shortened season, and every single episode is longer because they went to streaming, because Doctor Who no longer airs on the BBC and now only airs on Disney Plus. And you see, it airs on the BBC in the UK. It airs on the BBC.
Oh, okay. But it's not on BBC America?
It doesn't. It only airs on Disney Plus. And it still has the 6-episode season. And every single, I'm watching Doctor Who. Every single person who, like, has been watching Doctor Who for years is like, man, I love this season. I love Ruby Sunday. What I am missing are just, I'd love to see them talk in the TARDIS.
What made a lot of the early seasons of Doctor Who, at least New Who, successful, is the relationship between, like, Rose and the Doctor, Donna and the Doctor,
Amy, Rory and the Doctor, like, was huge because it was about the ways that those three cast members interacted. When Matt Smith regenerated and you saw Karen Gillan come back as Amy Pond, that has this huge emotional moment because you spend all of this time with Amy. Ruby, like, the newest companion, has just left the TARDIS, and I'm sad because I thought she was fun, but it does not feel like what it felt like to lose even, like, Martha,
who is a character Martha.
Martha stayed around for a season. But even,
and then she came back
and then she came back and she was slaying, whatever. But, like, her leaving hurt because we spent time with her.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to make genre television. This should not be, like, a thing that has to be 8 episodes and we're only doing plot-based stuff. Like,
it all boils down to this 8-episode structure, I feel.
I will forgive you. I have forgiven you slightly because I like Lost now. I will forgive you so hard if you come back to Star Wars and you make a 24-episode, 40 minutes each episode Star Wars TV series.
J.J. Abrams,
all your crimes will be forgiven if you give us Lost Star Wars.
No, 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 no. You can't bring this...
My personal crimes against you will be forgiven. Other people can make their determination.
Yeah,
I
no,
will
J.K. Abrams, I
forgive
haven't
you.
forgiven you for your crimes against women in the Star Trek movies. You're
That's
never.
separate. I'm only talking about Lost in Star Wars. I don't know about Star Trek.
I'm not forgiving him for that. If he comes back and he's like, I will make the Jedi Temple series, but it's like, but it's lost.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'll let him.
Sad. But once again,
Damon Lindelof, you can't come
it
back
has
and
to
do
be
that.
like Lost. It has to be
Damon Lindelof, you need
24.
to stay far the fuck away. But
Anyway.
we know how to do this.
It baffles me. And I think, not to bring Andor into this, but the structure of the 12, 13 episodes, however many they were, I don't really quite remember,
12,
that
beautiful.
worked. That worked.
And the episodes were long, too.
They
Or they were
were.
like at
They were
least
like
the
30, 40 minutes, much longer than the
40 minutes to an
episodes of The
hour, for sure.
Acolyte. Yeah. I don't.
And they had
I don't.
arcs. Every episode had a three-act
Yes!
structure.
Guys, I hate to say it. Maybe we need Ryan Murphy in Star Wars because you know who knows how the fuck to make network
What are
television?
you saying?
Ryan Murphy. Guys,
Stop. We've been
think about
recording
it though.
for way too long because Emily's asking for J.J. Abrams and Ryan Murphy to come back and write
Well,
Star
Ryan
Wars.
Murphy is an executive director on 911, so I
And which he
can't.
didn't like, he's not writing that.
He's not writing it, but I'm just saying this is what, maybe we need a Ryan Murphy associated, like he needs to like executive produce something. Like we need like his like also I think maybe a little bit we need his crazy ass plotting because I
No,
actually do.
absolutely
You know,
not.
we totally
Ryan
I
Murphy
actually do want a 911. I want, you know,
if
like
Ryan
OSHA doing her like droid work. I actually need like
first
what's the
responders
equivalent.
in Star Wars
What's the equivalent of the 118? I need to see the 118. Actually,
on
that
Coruscant. Oh my god, you know they're responding to
girl,
the
this is the
craziest
sixth
shit.
fanfic I'm requesting. This is the sixth fanfic that I'm requesting. It
The thing
has to
is,
exist somewhere. This has to exist.
I do have a very elaborate buddy Star Wars AU where they are Rebel fighter pilots.
Yes.
So,
Hold up. I'm
but
asking my
that's
friend if does the Star Wars 911 crossover exist? We have to find this.
I don't know. That's it's my I mean I have it in my head,
Of
but
course, but like there's got to be one that already exists.
I know
And
we were in the Discord at one point we were talking about High Republic or Jedi 118, but we do need like just the
no,
118
I need
as
contract work.
firefighters.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just
I
need like the
need.
118 as firefighters. I just need Evan Buckley as a firefighter.
I know I said that my favorite part of Star Wars are the space wizards. I will make an exception for contract workers on Coruscant, but it's structured like
If
911.
we can get Chimney Han slapping back to Band-Aids onto Jedi Padawans who fell off the Kyber Crystal Arch.
That's beautiful. Well, because like,
What an
what more?
insane sentence to say.
Oh my God.
Anyway, I feel we have to. Anyway, so our feelings on these apps, as you can tell, we have complicated feelings, but it's
We've
less on
been
the Acolyte itself and more on the general. It's like
structure.
it just happens to
Yes.
be the thing right now that is kind of pointing to the general problems with streaming
Yeah.
TV.
The common denominator is the streaming model, I fear.
Yes.
The show is still good. We're still liking
It
it.
is. We're still liking it, but, and I don't know if the listeners will know this or the rest of Star Wars Twitter, two things can be simultaneously true.
Oh my
And
God,
we can,
nuance.
yeah, I don't know. I don't know if some people understand that. Oh my God. I at least the one I tweeted about this week, but at least after this week, I will not have to see Rancid House of the Dragon and Acolyte takes back to back after each other. That is
It's
the
really
only
hard. It's really hard.
solace. That is the only
Honestly,
solace I will get
you
after this
just have to
show.
see Rancid House of the Dragon takes.
I've had to do
Yeah.
so many do not show me this person's tweet with so many bad Alice takes recently.
Ugh.
Anyway, my preference. I guess Eddie, do you have
I'm praying for
I don't
y'all. I
Eddie?
don't.
I
He was
don't
just
have
called
any
Morgan Eddie.
no any
Oh, Emmy. I thought you said
I'm
Eddie.
saying I'm saying are there
I was like,
any predictions?
what does my cousin
No.
Eddie have to do with this?
Are there any predictions for the finale? I guess we already kind of talked about
I
this.
feel like
I
we've
don't
talked
even
about
know.
this. I don't know. I don't predict or theorize
I have
anymore.
not had a lot of theories about this show. I just
Yeah,
kind of
I
watch
don't
it and
conspiracy theory.
I'm like
Yeah.
things. I
I
think
think
Andor, like every week, I was like
Had the beautiful minding it.
Like on my window with like a dry erase maker.
The opening scene of the it's that scene of The Social Network, but it's just you trying to figure out what's happening in Andor.
It's just me every week being like, Annie, here's how Cyril Karn is gonna detect.
After what's happened with the MCU and after what's happened with Mando and how all these stupid theories never come to pass, that we're never going to pass, and then people get upset, and then I've fallen too far into the Taylor Swift rabbit hole with all the Reputation TV theories. I can't do it anymore.
We can't do it. We have to save yourself.
No more theories.
My mastermind has not been helping.
No, absolutely not.
Most stressful moment of my life was Taylor Swift performing while I was watching the Euros today, and I was like,
she was crazy today too. What the fuck do you mean? She's like, Newspeak Now dress for one song.
For one single song.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I was also like way too caffeinated, and I was like, I think I'm gonna have a heart attack. And then it didn't even come home. It didn't even come home.
Anyway, literacy updates.
I'll go first. I have read maybe one single comic, and it was, I think, High Republic 8. I don't know. Whichever was either the most recent or second most recent one that came out. But that's the only thing. Oh, wait! I do have another update. I started reading Twilight for the first time.
Oh, fun!
I have never yearned for the Pacific Northwest as much as I have when reading that book. There's just a vibe.
Real. And
it has to be, like, the greenish cyan filter, too. That's how I envision the PNW now.
Of course.
But those are the only updates I have, unfortunately. Literacy has been struggling this year, and it's all George R.R. Martin's fault.
Oof. My literacy went away, and then it returned.
Somehow your literacy has returned.
Literacy has returned. I turned 25. And suddenly my brain was back to like, yeah.
Your prefrontal cortex developed.
It developed. I was like, do you remember how you liked reading? So unfortunately, I still did not finish Temptation of the Force. I was not really feeling it. I was enjoying it, but I wasn't really like feeling it. I didn't want to force myself to read it and dislike it at all by any means. So I just set that aside for a little bit. So I don't know if I was set this last time, but I finished You Should Be So Lucky, which Morgan, you should read. It is okay. A 60s. MLM romance between a baseball player and a sports reporter. Very good. I loved it so much. It was so fun. Absolutely fantastic. A 5 out of 5, one of my favorite books of the year. Yes. Then I read Lilith, which was a retelling of Lilith, who is Adam's first wife in certain mythologies. It was fine. I didn't know a lot about Lilith, so it was interesting to know about her. The writing style was very weird, and it was one of those things where it really shoved in your face this like feminist kind of interpretation, rather than I think something like Circe, which is a little bit better at like leading you to like interpret it. And also I hate to be this way, but like I didn't really love how certain characters were interpreted, in particular Mary Magdalene. Something really weird happened with Mary Magdalene in this book that I wasn't really sure about, and I didn't know if it was like just me being too Catholic for it, or if
that
it was
always
weird,
happens with Mary Magdalene.
I did read other comments that were like kind of felt the same way, not about Mary Magdalene in particular, because I don't think anybody really feels that connection to Mary Magdalene as I, but then I read The Paradise Problem, which I also very much enjoyed.
Oh,
just a fun little rom-com. Mm-hmm. Just a fun little rom-com where these two people got married so they could get, so this guy could, because she needed a place to live and he needed access to family housing for his grad program. So they get married, and then they're like, okay. And they just live together as roommates, like they don't even know each other. But then he has told his family that they've been married for the past 5 years, and it is his sister's wedding, and he needs her to come to this wedding and act like they have been married. So it's a fun little fake dating to real dating romance. And I just love like a vacation, like beach romance. So that was really fun. And then I read A Lady by Midnight, which is by my girl Tessa Dare. Historical romance, another fake fiance situation, another fake face being her fiance because she's like an orphan, all of a sudden this family is like, hey, you're our family, and he's like, I'm gonna like be your fake fiance to like protect you while we sniff these people out. But also it's very fun. It was my favorite of hers, but very good, very fun. And then I am currently reading On Earth We Were Briefly Gorgeous, which is one of Morgan's favorite books, and actually Morgan got it for me for Christmas. And it's about a Vietnam immigrant and his mother, and he's like writing letters to his mother about his like childhood and her life, and so far it is very beautiful. I'm not that far in. I'm like 50 pages in, I think. But so far the writing style is just very gorgeous, very beautiful. Already you can tell like the complexity of his relationship with like his mother and his grandmother is so fascinating. And then on top of that, both seeing things like the fallout of the Vietnam War on you know, especially like Vietnamese refugees and that, and also just like this view of being like an immigrant child with like a single mother. Very, very good, loving it so far. It's probably gonna be a 5-star read, but definitely something that I, yeah. So yeah, literacy has returned, and
literacy has returned.
So good. Like I said, I'm hoping to return to Temptation of the Force soon. Hopefully, I think I'll probably need to read, like, after this book, I'll probably need a little bit of a pick-me-up romance a little bit, and then get into back to Star Wars.
Oh, boy.
Morgan.
Okay, my literacy update. Sorry, I... facing the horrors. No, I'm not. I've also been doing a lot of reading. I've been actually reading through, I'll start with like the comics that I've been reading and then go through. I've been reading Chris Claremont's, or rereading Chris Claremont's original Wolverine miniseries, Chris Claremont and Frank Miller's Wolverine miniseries, as well as Larry Hama's Wolverine solo series. And that's for my podcast, which I'll talk about when I do my promo things. But that's been very fun. It's very interesting. Like, I am very much of the opinion that nobody really writes Wolverine like Chris Claremont, for better and for worse. And I think that it's really interesting to read the ways that he specifically writes Logan, and the ways that I think that Logan as a solo character shifts is so different from the way that Claremont writes him on the team, and then also in the ways that like he's evolved since this miniseries. I'm very fascinated by him. And then I have just finished, in kind of rapid succession, 3 books, because my personal life has been weird, so I've been reading. And I just finished James by Percival Everett, which is kind of like the big buzzy book of this past year. It is Percival Everett, who's kind of one of the seminal Black authors in the U.S. It is his reinterpretation of the adventures of Huckleberry Finn, told through the eyes of Huck Finn's enslaved friend Jim, and it is Everett's reimagining of James's interior life, and a really interesting kind of portrayal of just of that, and also like a very kind of emotional, evocative experience of the American South during the lead up to the American Civil War. in ways that I really, really enjoyed. It's getting a lot of buzz. It's getting a lot of praise, and I think it really deserves it. And then I finished Out There Screaming, which is a horror anthology book.
Ooh.
I think I just didn't, I audiobooked it, and then audiobooked it over a really long period of like my library giving it to me and then taking it away. And so I kind of read it really disjointedly, and so there was like a lot of kind of disconnect with the stories for me. But overall, like as a horror anthology, I think it was really interesting. It's an anthology of new Black horror, which is also kind of part of why I was reading it. So it's all kind of horror written by Black authors, or from a Black perspective, which was really engaging and really exciting. And then just this morning, I finished Hijab Butch Blues, which has immediately entered my lesbian canon. Hijab Butch Blues is kind of a play on Stone Butch Blues by Lizzie Feinberg. Hijab Butch Blues is the memoir of a queer hijabi Muslim immigrant who kind of remains anonymous throughout all of her writing. And it is her journey to an acceptance of her own queerness and how she kind of parallels that with her Muslim identity. And I found it, I mean, I kind of been talking a lot about like faith and religion, and I found it just a really moving portrait of the way that faith can interact with queerness and the way that religion can interact with all of these different things. And I read it in like 5 hours. I was audiobooking it, but I just kind of sped through it. Well, as soon as I picked it up, I didn't put it down. So that's what I've been doing. I'm about to start a new book. I guess I'm like 50 pages into another book, but I'm not passing judgment on that one yet. And those are my literacy updates. I've been reading so much. I've been reading a lot of scholarly stuff, reading Wherever That Window Went. I was reading, like, I have a bunch of scholarly articles about samurai cinema for my podcast. So it's been fun. I like to read.
Delightful.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. We talked for like 4 hours.
We talked for long. But I think this is a very good episode. And we really appreciate having you on. I think this is the first like official Star Wars episode you've been on.
Yeah. Last time I was here to talk about Daisy Jones the Sixth.
Daisy Jones the Sixth. So thank you. Please plug away.
My big thing to plug is my own podcast where I teach the X-Men over at Mutant Studies 101. So that's Mutant Studies 101 wherever you get your podcasts, and Mutant 101 Pod on all the socials. But it is a podcast about the X-Men. Every single week, me and my co-host Dean, not every single week, but like bi-weekly, whenever. Every episode, we'll say, we kind of go through and we break down a character or a storyline or an aspect of the X-Men comics in an academic perspective and in an academic way. By the time this comes out, we hopefully will have an episode about the Mojoverse with friend of the show, Claire Kreese. And coming toward the end of the month, we have something about Wolverine, which is why I've been doing all that samurai reading. That's my big thing to plug. Everyone go listen to my podcast. If you follow me, you can find the other things that I do, but my one true love is Mutant Studies 101. So I have to plug it. It is my favorite child.
Yeah. Also, speaking of other podcasts, there might potentially be something from me and other friends of the podcast.
Yes,
I'm
very excited.
If you've seen my Twitter and seen me maybe seen something called Three Can Keep a Secret Pod, you might want to keep an eye out for that happening. And if you were maybe really into Pretty Little Liars when you were in your teen years, or if you don't know anything about Pretty Little Liars but would like to hear some thoughts, maybe you should check that out soon. First episode coming soon. But
I'm very excited about this. I've been following production.
It's been a while, but we're very excited. But yeah, thank you guys so much for listening. Once again, thank you, Morgan, for coming on. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media again. Once again, our email is still open for questions. If you have any, feel free to send it to us. We haven't had one in a while, but once again, we really, really like answering them.
Submit those fan fictions that I asked about.
Yeah, go ahead. And then once again, if you do that fan fiction and you want to have us do a live reading,
please, please.
Go ahead and...
We slide so bad.
Just slide into the email. But thank you, and may the force be with you. I think you're in charge of recording.
Oh. Okay. Whoops.